Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires, and also with support from Bell Racing Helmets USA this month. We are here May 12th. This would be the second day of on-track activity here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We have just completed the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Mr. Mike Hull, Managing Director of Chip Ganassi Racing. That Scott Dixon guy of yours, 18th to 2nd. I'm sure you have to be disappointed. I mean, you know, you left one on the board there.
Yeah, we did leave one on the board, but it was nice. Chip is in Kansas for the NASCAR race and got a text just as we crossed the start-finish line, so he was off obviously watching television there, and said, you know, that's like winning today, considering where we started. And I said to one of the journalists earlier today that we'd hired a real estate agent because we were starting the race in another county, and that's the way it felt. But you know what? We were terrible on Friday, which was the practice qualifying day. We couldn't create compliance at all. And last night, Scott and the engineers worked really, really hard, and we changed everything on the car that you could conceivably change to try to create grip for us and try to balance that with aero, and went out in the warm-up this morning and decided to do a long run just to make sure it worked once the balance check was right, which it was. And so we ran to work on fuel as well as on consistency for the entire time in the warm-up this morning, and it paid off in the race.
So I think we expected to see Dixon move forward, right? When you're starting 18th and you're a four-time champ, not surprised to see Dixie go forward. Tell us a little bit about the assistance, either strategy-wise, whether to be on the Firestone Blacks, the Firestone Reds, because on top of just driving really hard, he obviously needed you all in pit lane to definitely assist in the ride.
Well, with 85 laps in the race and the kind of fuel mileage you normally make, the windows, what we call the windows, were big windows. So what that does is that allows you to stop when you can find the most open track position. So we got to we stopped on 13, which is early.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people went to 23, 24, 25.
But you're trying to open up windows to give yourself
options.
So on the
racetrack.
Yeah.
So when you leave the pit lane, you want the most advantageous track advantage you can have there, and you want your driver to go out and drive like it's a qualifying lap for as many laps as he can before he finds traffic. I think we drove 12 or 13 laps before we found the first car, and for those 12 laps, he was going almost 2 seconds a lap faster than anybody
crazy.
On the racetrack.
Just crazy.
He was on sticker reds, which was in our plan, and then the people we were racing against began to peel in the pits, and we used that to our advantage, and we passed, I think, everybody except that we had potentially could. Except for Rossi, and we got him on the second stop by an eyelash. His guys did a great job, and our guys did a great job, and just beat him out of the pits. That's how you have to do it. It doesn't always work that way. So appreciate very much that IndyCar changed the laps for the race.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really helped with our strategy.
As I mentioned in the beginning, we have our friends at Bell Racing Helmet supporting us this month, and our podcast, our days at Indy, are supported by them as well. And if you're in town this month, you're getting ready for the Indy 500, be sure to stop by their new location on Main Street in Speedway, Indiana, right by IMS, where we are right now. Mike, synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. Bell is trusted by more champion drivers than any other brand. We have 19 Bell helmeted drivers here getting ready to try and qualify for the Indy 500. So stop in, get some merchandise, and check out their new facility. So as Robin and I were discussing right after the race, it seemed like at least roughly halfway in, it was either going to be Wickens standing atop the podium, Willpower, but there was going to be a 1-2 somewhere there. Obviously, you guys had different plans. You had different thoughts about who might be standing where in the podium. What are you doing? What aren't you doing while Dixie is out, whether it is being on Red's clear road, 2 seconds per lap faster than everyone else? How much are you on the radio letting him know the ground being gained? Or is this a situation where you kind of let the virtuoso
work? Well, we set it up early. When we started the race on black tires in 18th position. And once everybody settled down and the thing got going, he worked a little bit of magic and passed a couple people there on the start. And then there were those two incidents kind of simultaneously that moved us up a couple more spots. That helped. I think we were 13th at that point, starting in 18th, so we were actually five spots up, which we hadn't anticipated,
yeah.
But that worked. And so what we do on the radio is let him know what the lap times are on red tires. So the people that are out there either on sticker reds or scrubbed reds, they're running. They were running a full second a lap faster than
wow.
we were at that point, pretty consistently. So that meant for we were in on 13, so for 12 laps in the in lap 13, we lost to the people on reds. We lost at least 12 seconds to the leader.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
So we knew that we had to double that up coming back, which we were able to do, Scott was able to do, and he understood that before we ever left the pit lane. And he understood what the pace was, and so as he was running, those people's the people we were racing against at that point were on reds, but they were well used. So now they've slowed down a ton, and we are getting after it.
Yeah.
So it just worked, you know. It just worked well, and Scott understands all of that. You know, people probably remember we won from the back row at Mid-Ohio doing exactly the same thing, where we just waited for that track position to open up.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
when it opened up, we took full advantage of it. And the hardest part in doing these things is patience on behalf of the driver, because you don't want him to throw it away and have to make that time up all over again. And the people working on the car in the pit lane, the guys that are making the stop, and the people calling the strategy, you have to inhale and exhale so that when you strike, the strike is correct. That comes from experience on all fronts, and that comes from an understanding of each other. You know, Scott can tell with the inflection of my voice what's going on these days, because
yeah.
we've been together for 16 years. So,
are you getting him something for tomorrow for Mother's Day at least? I figure you guys trade major gifts on
well,
days
I don't know.
Like that.
You know, I think maybe we should probably do something for each other. But it's just great when it works. And this year it hasn't worked well for us. We've had some, by our standards, some not the greatest races. But you just don't give up, no matter what. And if you take that attitude with everybody on your team, you get result.
Let's talk about that a little bit before we move on to other aspects of the race. I know the team went, from what I was told, fairly aggressive on Dixon's setup in qualifying. Didn't pan out. Came back to a little more familiar place that obviously he was able to use to his advantage today. But as you mentioned, this has not been a typical start to the season like we would expect from your team. Great pivot point today. But is there anything you've seen in the start of the season that makes you think here's a trend we should be concerned about, or is this just oddity?
You know what? We've had slow starts in the past, and we've worked our way toward the heavens from there. You know, at St. Pete, we had some misfortune on the racetrack, and we kind of made some of that back, and it was okay. At Long Beach, we left him on the racetrack too long, and we paid the price when the pits were closed there. We had a great car there.
Yeah.
We should have finished at the front there, but I could take the blame for that. I didn't call him soon enough. He was doing his part, and I think I was probably too greedy when it came to wanting to take full advantage of the racetrack, because at that point we had open track position, and we were trying to get the most out of it. But we probably should have come a lap after everybody else stopped, and we held on for another lap at the end, and we paid the price for that. At Phoenix, we had a decent race. It wasn't probably the best, but it wasn't the worst. It was okay.
Sure.
And Barber was kind of that rain thing. We were on a one-stop strategy there, and so was Bourdais. And we could not believe that other people weren't doing that with the laps remaining when
yeah.
we started running the next day. Because you didn't even have to work to make mileage to make it a one-stop strategy. So we had already pitted, and it started raining. So everybody that was going to have to come in front of us came for reins, and we had to come for reins at that point. I think we were fifth behind him. We ended up fifth or sixth. We would have been second. So that's just the luck of the draw, I guess. So I don't know. I think today was a good race for us. We got the most out of it. Our people just worked really, really hard to be prepared today in all areas and all aspects. And they didn't make mistakes, and Scott didn't make mistakes today, and that's what really is rewarding when you get it right.
One of the first things you did after the race, walking towards Victory Lane, where the top three finishers were, obviously including Dixon, is you saw Roger Penske,
mm-hmm.
and went and congratulated him on 200 wins.
Yeah.
You've always been very open in the fact that, yes, you represent Chip Ganassi Racing, in this instance, a different engine manufacturer and such, but that has never stopped you from paying respect to those who achieve, like Roger. Tell us just thoughts about someone who I know you respect, but also you love the ability to compete against him enriches you and your organization so much.
You know, the thing is I have, from the time I was watching racing, Roger was racing something, and I always had such great admiration for how he managed winning, and how he drove his people to win with dignity, respect, and integrity. And I think that's really, really important. I think that's a lesson that should be learned by everybody in motor racing, and I think having the staying power that he has represents that quite well. And what's really great about him for me is that when we finish in front of him, he will come and find me and shake my hand before he becomes a memory going wherever he's going next in his life, you know. And I was in Victory Lane to talk to Scott and walked out, and he wasn't in there. Roger wasn't in there, and I knew he was coming, so I waited, and he turned up and certainly congratulated him for what his team accomplished today, because I don't know, in my lifetime I'll be able to truly understand the ramification of what he has done for IndyCar racing. The generation behind me or behind them, my kids probably will. Because I don't know that any of us, any team, will ever accomplish that over the generations that he's managed to do.
Let's close on a couple items. We have Will Power winning his third Indy Grand Prix out of the five so far. We have Robert Wickens continuing to, I don't want to say make other teams regret that they didn't hire him, but realize that, ooh, this was a diamond that was waiting to be discovered. Share some thoughts about Power. Obviously, Dixon put him under intense pressure, wanted to get by him, but thoughts about the quality that he continues to demonstrate now so many years into his career, and also the fact that, man, if there's a guy who really just needed a win, it seemed like he was definitely on that list.
Well, I don't know. I think that Scott Dixon needed a win, so Will should have pulled over for
us. Well, fair enough. We'll talk to him in a minute.
But I've been impressed with Will Power since the first time that I watched him drive.
Hmm.
He's got such a great sense about what goes on with his car. He knows with probably on a given day might be a hard car to drive. He knows the limits of that race car, and he gets the most out of it for an entire run. I'm not surprised that he wins, and he wins with flair.
It's never, you know, there's never a boring Will Power win. That's
no,
a great point.
It's like watching the Three Musketeers in one guy. You know, it's like watching some sword fighter go out there and do it the right way. He's fun to watch. And I know Scott has a great deal of respect for him. And he works really, really hard when he's around him, and I think that they respect each other on the racetrack. I know they do. And when you're lucky enough to be in the same racing against him in the same race, I think that says a lot. That's a testament to the quality of your driver and your team, because he's one of the best that's ever driven an IndyCar.
Your young driver, Ed Jones, was having a pretty good day. Obviously, cut tire late in the race, or later in the race, really torpedoed his chances. What do you think about this Schmidt-Peterson I'm doing air quotes, rookie here. He is a rookie, and, you know, technically a rookie. He hasn't done this at most of these tracks before, especially in an Indy car. But, boy, this guy is looking like he has a – if his future isn't already bright, man, I can't wait to see him next year.
Robert
Wickens, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Ed Jones, too. I'm not,
no, okay.
not downplaying
I
Ed.
Think
just we got Robert
Wickens
on the podium
has done
here.
It the right way before he got to IndyCar racing. I've said this. I think I've been quoted maybe to you. I'm not sure who it's been, and I've said it more than once. I feel like a North American race driver should go to Europe. And that driver, in their formative years, should race in Europe in a competitive series, in a competitive atmosphere, because if you've been there and you see how young people race in that system there, there's no do-overs.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's not this I don't want to demean what we do in the United States, but what happens in America?
You get cast aside quickly if you don't perform in Europe.
Yeah, I just think that he learned to race. I mean, he raced in Canada, but he raced in a series that was ultra competitive, in a manufacturer series, where you had to get it done, and if you didn't get it done, you didn't drive anymore, and you had to follow team orders in order to do it, and he did all of that, and I have such a high degree of respect for him and also drivers like him that come back to the United States and race, because I think that's what, if you look at Will Power, you know, he's another example of a person who raced in Europe before he came to America in a similar system. So I just think that's really important. If a driver can find a way to get to Europe, he or she should.
Absolutely. Let's talk about one or two more drivers before we close on this upcoming, some sort of 500-mile race they're having somewhere. I've heard about it. I'm not sure. I've got to check that part out. This guy who loves climbing into twin-turbo V6-powered Ford GTs under the Chip Ganassi banner, and Sebastian Bourdais. Obviously, Seb had a strong day. You know, he qualified third, finished fourth, was able to run second for a little bit in the early going. What comes to mind when you see someone like Seb, maybe not so much him, because you know his talent, but the fact that here we are almost week in, week out, we expect to see Dale Coyne racing towards the front of the grid. I mean, you wind the clock back 5 years. These are words we would never mention. That, to me, is one of the great stories of the year so far. What do you think about one of the proverbial minnows continuing to show that, hey, no, take us seriously?
Well, if we're talking about Sebastian Bourdais on the IndyCar team that he's on, that's not a minnow team. All you have to do is walk behind that timing stand and look at the engineering prowess standing on that stand to know how serious Dale Coyne is about IndyCar racing these days. The payroll on that timing stand is big, and he has proper support for Sebastian. And in Sebastian, they have a driver that has, we know now for a fact, because he drives our Ford GT and does a great job with it, he's the package. He's the package. And he has directed enthusiasm to get it done. And what I really like about him as a driver is, and from the very first day he was in the GT car, he comes right in and tells you what's wrong with the car.
Oh, yeah, he gives you the business right away.
He doesn't mince any words. And so what's really great about that is you can get the job done quickly. You can get on to other things. When he tells you the brakes aren't right, or the car doesn't turn, or the aero is wrong, or, you know, you could go down this laundry list of items to improve the car, and he will immediately and in detail tell you how to make your car better, and he's not afraid to do it. And he's not afraid to stamp on toes to do it, and I like that a lot, because we have drivers like that, and we have people with thick skins, but they have ears. And when you have that combination of people working for you, you can get a lot done. So I'm not as surprised what he's doing today with Dale's team, and I applaud Dale for what he's doing.
Let's close on today's performances with obviously part of the winning team, but I particularly delighted in seeing Elio Castroneves finish sixth, knowing that, he's done a little bit of testing and whatnot. He hasn't been, you know, last time he raced an IndyCar, it was a beautiful September in Sonoma. Mm-hmm. Newgarden, a little bit of adversity, tried an over-optimistic pass. It didn't work out. Simon got spun on the first lap. So, again, I know that obviously he had a little bit of help with some teams falling back, but still have to imagine there's a little bit of a smile seeing that, yeah, Ellie was a full-timer in sports cars, but nice to the old man can come back and finish with the top six.
Well, I agree with that. You know what? I don't know that he's ever had a bad day.
at least a bad hair day. He's never had one
of
those.
Yeah, no, I don't know about the hair part, but and I've never seen that out of place either. The I like people that have his kind of attitude.
Mm.
I like that positive attitude. On the worst day in the world, when he gets out of the car, if it's a smoking mess and he steps out of what's left of it, he still applauds everybody around him and his fellow competitors. And
there was one day in Edmonton where maybe he had a little, you know, Charles Burns might have.
That was with us, actually. He was upset with us.
Okay, fair
point. And I got into it with Cindric that day, too. And I don't know. That took us a while to heal that one. I just like that. You can get so much more done if you approach your life like that.
Mm. Let's close, Mike, on what is coming up. I mean, it's way too early to start previewing the Indy 500 and who's going to win and all that kind of stuff. But we are here Saturday evening after the Indy GP. Cars will be on track, first day of practice on Tuesday. Tell us what your team will be doing between now and Tuesday, and because I assume that there's probably a fairly similar blueprint most teams will be following. Everybody go home, get good rest tonight. What's Mother's Day is tomorrow. What happens between now and Tuesday for your team?
Well, first of all, we do forecast what's coming next, and for Indianapolis, the Indy 500 practice week, we start on Tuesday. We run Tuesday to Friday. Then we qualify on the weekend, and then we run the following Monday for 5 hours in what you'd call a full race practice. So there are a lot of parts and pieces that we've already prepared prior to coming here that are oval parts and pieces or low-mileage parts or practice parts that will be followed later in the week or toward the end of the week or for race practice the following week as race items for our cars. Those are already ready to go. So our shop is closed tomorrow, Mother's Day. The grounds here at the Speedway are closed, but we're not taking anything out of here.
Mm.
We'll come back at 8 o'clock on Monday morning and go to work. And we have two cars sitting here that were our spare cars for the road track race, which will be our Indy oval cars. So the engines will come out of the road racing cars. And those will start the practice week with those, get all the way through qualifying, and then race motors will be put in after that. So it'll be a long one-day event for us to be ready to start on Tuesday. As veterans, both Ed Jones and Scott Dixon run, I think, from 11 to 1, and then rookies and refreshers run for a couple hours, and then we run at the end of the day on Tuesday, and 11 to 6 Wednesdays, Thursday, and Friday. Boost goes up on Friday, so we'll get to see a little speed, hopefully, and then we'll get after it with qualifying. So I think we're pretty well prepared, and those that have significant others can take full advantage of that on Sunday. And if you don't, you can play golf or something.
Nice. And the spare cars that are going to be your Speedway cars, those are vehicles where, let's just say, you did not want those to have to be used as spares for the road course because the team has spent an inordinate amount of time trying to perfect the bodywork and all the seams so they're as perfect through the air as possible. So that's the other thing, too. It's not as if you have, quote, Speedway cars sitting there, but they have been specially prepared that, hopefully they should be perfect once you roll off on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, they say the best laid plans of mice and men would tell you that you want to have the perfect race car for the entire time at the Indianapolis 500. But we've seen cars come out of the museum that have won this race. So you try to have a plan and stick to the plan. And if everything goes right, that's what we'll do.
Mike Hull, thank you, my friend, for joining me for the May 12 edition of The Day at Indy on the Marshall Pro Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires.
Well,
and supported this month
by
Bell Helmets.
Great to be with you guys, and get such a lot of get so many positive comments about what you do, Marshall. So thank
you
for
what you
do.
Oh, don't start that silliness, Mike. Come on now. Robin and I were having people throw beer cans at us today and all kinds of stuff like that.
Well, they were probably full.
Truth. A couple of them bonked me in the head. But no, I mean, and thank you. Another thing that we always get is so many comments, just folks appreciating your insights and breaking open the inside of the sport that you know, often is not always explained well. So don't be surprised if I ask you up here one or two more times before we're done this month.
Okay, let's see what happens.